Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
I had the courage, if that's what the word is, to do it because of my faith, and ultimately the bottom line being that I'm not loved for what I do, but who I am. Now, it's easy to say that, and I believe it at least 16% of the time.
Just carry on is the thing. And so, yeah, faith probably played a part, but in a different way. Because I wasn't looking to be a stand-up comedian. I was training to be a Baptist minister. I came out of Baptist ministry college as a comedian.
Hello and welcome to Unbelievable, the show that aims to get Christians and non-Christians thinking about the topics that really matter to all of us. Before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles and resources. But for now, let's jump in on today's discussion.
Well, hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Unbelievable from Premier Christian Radio. This is the show that gets people across the belief spectrum talking. I am your host, Andy Kind, and because we're between Christmas and New Year, we thought maybe something a bit more lighthearted for this episode. So I have been joined by the other two wise men, two men of faith, two men who are working on the comedy circuit and with interesting backstories and hopefully future stories as well. I've been joined today by Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan. Hello, chaps.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. All the better for seeing you. So welcome to this festive edition. We don't have Christmas hats on because we don't have the budget for it. But in this show, I thought we'd talk about many things. We're going to use the standard comedy lineup structure of an opening act, an open spot in the middle, and then the headliner to close over the three sections. So let's crack straight on and start with your backstory, condensed backstory. First of all, start with you, Milton, because you're probably the more well-known of the three, or the most well-known. How did you get into comedy? How long ago was that? And was your faith instrumental in that? Did you get into comedy because of your faith, in spite of your faith, or were they non-overlapping magisteria?
At the end of the 80s, I tried to be an actor, and no one else wanted me to be an actor in the business. So I tried to do stand-up in sort of 89, I think it was. I tried to do it in a sense to get people to come and see me and be able to do acting. Because, I mean, at that time, in the last century, more people went to Speedway than they did to stand-up comedy. And it was alternative comedy in those days. And I thought, well, let's see if I can get into acting this way. And that's what I tried to do. But gradually, as comedy became bigger, I did more shows. And it took a long time, but I still kept going with the comedy, was able to make a bit of money with it. And as it is today, you know, it eventually became a job that, well, there are courses now at universities that can turn you into, and arguably it's more generic, but it is a recognized job. So that's how I started. Faith, I don't think I was specifically guided or anything, but I suppose I had the courage, if that's what the word is, to do it because of my faith, and ultimately the bottom line being that I'm not loved for what I do, but who I am. Now, it's easy to say that, and I believe it at least 16% of the time.
Yeah.
But I think that's the bottom line. Because, as we know, it's about persistence to begin with. And it helps to have a bit of talent. I mean, it's the cliche. It's better to have 80% persistence and 20% talent than the other way around. So I think certainly in terms of keeping going, faith is behind it in a big way. And we all knew people who gave up who were hilarious, but sort of didn't quite have the persistence.
I remember you saying to me years ago that there were people that you started with who were funnier than you, but you just kept going.
Yeah. Yeah. And they may be doing something brilliant somewhere else for all I know. But I think too, I mean, I think people like John Bishop and stuff would say that it doesn't help if you have another job in many ways. If you have put all your eggs into one basket, you have to make it work. And, you know, it wasn't until certain people left their well-paid jobs that they were able to make it out of desperation more than anything else.
Yeah.
But I came from a Christian home originally. And so the idea of God was sort of in the DNA.
Yeah. And was your dad in ministry as well? Was your dad in ministry?
Well whatever that is. Yeah. He was a lay preacher, I think, technically. So he was a physicist, actually, but he did, you know, he has the stand-up gene in every sense, both to preach and lots of missionaries in the family sort of thing. But as I've said many times before, if you grow up in a Christian house, it's a bit like being introduced to the antidote before you know what the poison is.
Yes.
And it takes a while for you to go, oh, right, I see. It's people who don't have a faith, at least, or don't know God, don't quite have the same foundation or potential foundation. So gradually I was able, I mean, but quite often what annoys me sometimes is people come up to me and say, oh, do you know what's great about you and your act is that you don't swear. And I'm not saying it's good to swear and all that, but it's not the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a byproduct. That's really not the point of doing it. If what I do works and it resonates with people, it's because it brings joy for whatever reason. And it's not everyone's cup of tea, which is fine. That's true of any kind of attempted art. But there's a sort of binary thing in the church that said, well, does he swear or doesn't he? Okay, I like him. You know,
yeah.
Which is frustrating to me.
Yeah, and I think probably to all three of us, I was asked only this morning on BBC local radio whether I was clean and trying to make a point about being clean. And I agree with you, Milton. I'm not trying to be clean. I'm trying to be funny.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Comedy is an extension of who you are, even if you're someone like you, Milton, who plays a sort of character on stage. And I want to tap into that a bit later on. But I don't swear on stage because I don't really swear in real life, although probably a bit more since the pandemic. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Well, we'll come back to all of that. And I really want to talk about the Christian stance on comedy that you've just touched on. But let's go to Alan next. Alan, can you give us your backstory of getting into comedy? Because you are a professional preacher. You're a Baptist minister, aren't you?
I've been called worse. Like, I'm a minister of a church. I'm a Baptist minister. And as part of me training, I was in college in Manchester. And I was doing a homiletics class, which is a preaching class for those who don't know. And I literally, the tutor was saying, the day of preaching is finished. No one listens anymore. No one communicates with one microphone and one person anymore. It's the day of preaching's over. And I'd literally been to see Peter Kay in the Echo Arena. 11,000 people shouting for more after an hour and a half. You know what I mean? With one break. And I just said to him, that's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. Yeah, it's never been more popular. The mold has never been more popular, you know. And I said, it's not the one person, one microphone. That's the problem. The problem is what you say when you've got the microphone in your hand. That's the problem. And that led to a discussion in class, and then that led to a learning objective. So I wish I'd have kept my mouth shut. But I ended up on one of them comedy courses, a 6-week comedy course. I was never going to be into stand-up comedy or anything like that. I'd never even thought about it. And I got sent on a 6-week comedy course with the Sam Avery, who you might know, like that, and Brendan Riley. And I literally, at the end of the 6-week comedy courses, you know, you've got to do a performance. And I did a performance. It sort of went well. I'd never even been into a comedy club before. It was madness. It was totally brand new to me. But I had to compare and contrast preaching and comedy. That was my assignment after I had to write an essay on this thing. And I kind of noticed some little things on that, the differences and the similarities in communication. But I ended up doing another gig in a small bar. And when I say small bar, it was like smaller than your living room, probably. So from a kind of gig where all your mates and that come to a gig where they're sitting there, all six of them going, impress me, you know what I mean? And it just, some fella took a liking to me. So me and him used to travel around a little bit. And I just carried on. As Milton was obviously saying, just carry on is the thing. And so, yeah, faith probably played a part, but in a different way. Because I wasn't looking to be a stand-up comedian. I was a trainer to be a Baptist minister. I came out of Baptist ministry college as a comedian. So, do with that what you think. I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Because you come from whereas Milton and I are both good Anglican boys by stock.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't come from a Christian background, do you?
No, I mean, if there was any church I was part of, the school was kind of linked to an Anglican church, but, you know, you went at Easter and Christmas, that was it. So I got into being a Baptist because I didn't even know what that was, right?
Yeah.
At 16, the age of 16, when I came to faith, whatever that means. That's how I got into being a Baptist. It wasn't a sort of the Baptist church out. It was almost I just ended up in one. Yeah, and I've been in the same church ever since. I'm now the minister in that church. Been there a long time. Been there, I don't know, can't remember now, 30-something, 40 years. 40 years I've been there. So that's a long time.
So we've got Alan, who got into it by accident, went to Bible college and came out as a comedian. We've got Milton, who also got into it through expediency, wanting to be an actor, and ended up as one of the top comedians in the country. My story is that I became a Christian at the age of 22 and suddenly realized that maybe if God is real, there's a bit in the Bible where it says God gives you the desires of your heart. So I thought, okay, maybe this desire to be on stage, to be a performer and a comedian that I've always had, maybe that's not simply a product of socio-biological evolution. Maybe there's something wired into me. So that's how we all got into it. And we've got I don't want to count the number of years we've done combined as comedians.
I mean, sorry, can
Go
I
on.
Just...
Yeah.
That's how I met you.
Yeah.
I actually interviewed Milton as well, weirdly enough, by email. But I met you in Manchester, if you remember, in a coffee shop in Manchester to discuss about... Can stand-up comedy be a missional tool in comedy clubs? It was like a really long question, long answer. Long question, that's the word I'm looking for, isn't it? And I had to do a dissertation on it, and I got a few people who I knew had faith of some description and interviewed a few people about it. And everyone said no, and I totally agreed with the answer. However, I thought, it has to be doable to some degree. Even I understand why everyone said no, having done it for a long time now. But I also, it has to be something, and I don't mean like full on, you know, Billy Graham kind of thing. But somehow it has to be missional. It had to be able to be. If Ricky Gervais, who's going with the culture, can talk about atheism quite easily and everyone laughs, then surely I can talk about faith and make people laugh, was what I came up with in the end. Yeah. That's how we met.
Yeah. And it's really, really interesting. So many things I want to drill down into, not least the question of preaching and can comedy preach? Can it be missional? Let's talk about that straight away. And also, we need to touch later, Alan, about how you not only stumbled into comedy, but somehow stumbled to the semi-final of Britain's Got Talent as well. So we'll...
Yeah.
We'll come to that.
That was terrible.
Simply by taking the path of least resistance. So I've got my own thoughts on this as well, but why is it then, do we think, that people like Ricky Gervais can preach his worldview, and yet if any three of us went into a comedy club to preach our worldview, it wouldn't have the same impact? What do we think about that? Milton, you must have spent some time thinking about this.
Sure. Well, I would say that it's mostly because he's preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
And people already think a bit like that to begin with. Now, he may push them even further and give them some ideas they haven't thought of. But I think it's a hard thing to preach to the unconverted and make them laugh. Not that it's impossible, but the bottom line isn't very funny. Very bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, you can sort of be funny on the way there. But actually, if you're, you may disagree, Alan, but from my point of view, you know, sometimes I've been asked to speak in church and think, well, I could do some jokes, and then it gets a bit serious after that. And it's difficult to combine the two. I mean, how many times have you seen someone in church do a joke and then speak about something serious, but all you remember is the joke? I think probably what Jesus did, and it's difficult to know with translation, is that you were left with the truth rather than the joke that he opened with. And I'm not a teacher. I'm not an evangelist. I'm just a comedian. So I am, that's what I'm trying. And it's not even so much the words I'm saying. Hopefully, it's the spirit in which it's done. I always use Tim Viner as an example because it, you know, I've seen Tim go on at horrible clubs. And thing that Christians sometimes say is that all laughter is good. No, it's not. It really isn't. If you've been in some of the clubs we've been in, there's nasty, bullying, cynical laughter. And, you know, picking in the front person in the front row, being horrible to them for the sake, you know, all that stuff. And I've seen that happen. And then Tim come on, and we all know Tim, doing his jokes. First 3 minutes, not much at all. But actually, the tone of the laughter, once it comes, is different.
Yeah.
And I would say it's a purer joy.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to pin down because you get into individual jokes and stuff, and that it all breaks apart. But the spirit of what he's doing is something different. And he's not preaching in the sense of, you know, do that and don't do this. It's just who he is. And that... feeds into the Assisi line of preach the gospel at all times, but if you have to use words.
Yeah.
And he is using words, but he's not preaching at anyone.
Yeah, that's it.
And to me, I'm not saying there's not a place for preaching at people. So to answer the question, Ricky Gervais is preaching to the converted, and sometimes I think it's almost impossible to preach to people who don't always think that way to begin with. Church is a different context, but in a sort of Hyde Park corner or wherever it is, out there, you have to use some kind of camouflage.
Yeah,
which is what Tim's got.
And I think also, because we'll have all have had people saying to us, oh, so when you're at a comedy club, do you get the chance to, you know, do you try and share the gospel? Well, I could do that, but I could probably only do it once because, Milton, you said you're just a comedian and you didn't mean that in a pejorative sense, but our job is comedy and we are there to do the job. We are there to serve the audience. And you might say, mind you, that all public speaking is an attempt at persuasion. And for someone like Tim, it might simply be a persuasion to laugh. But as you said, Milton, the reason why people can make jokes about Christianity from an atheistic perspective is because probably most people there are sympathetic to that. Laughter being all about recognition means you won't laugh at something you don't recognize. So if we go on and start not even doing jokes about what it's like to be in church and all the biscuit selections, but trying to be positive and funny about Christianity, what you're asking the people to do is not just laugh, but change their minds as you're going. And maybe it's possible, but I don't really know anyone who's been able to persuade someone over the course of a dialogue. Certainly what we'll probably all have had is experiences where people have been to see us perform and thought, well, I really liked that they were clean, or I really liked that they were positive, they tried to inject joy, and I just really resonated with them as a person. Maybe I'll do some more thinking about it. But we're not selling the gospel, we're only trying to sell jokes, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. And no one says that to a Christian baker.
No.
You know, the, except maybe hot cross buns and once a year. Yeah. He does a Christian-y thing. You know, it's more about, does he overcharge people? Does it taste nice? And, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just because it looks a bit similar.
Yeah.
I think I get away with more than the likes of you guys would just because of me job. It's actually being said to me. So I can go in a comedy club and I get introduced as the Reverend Alan Finnegan onto stage, which helps in lots of ways and also is a bit unfortunate sometimes. But because it's my job, I've been told by other comedians, you get away with talking about God in a comedy club where other people wouldn't. Because it's your job. And I'll have lots of conversations, as you probably do yourselves, in green rooms. But again, because of my job, that's what they end up talking to me about. And what I've found with a lot of the comedy clubs that I've done is it feels to me like the culture around a comedy club is atheistic. Yeah. So the management, the people who run the places are more atheistic. The crowds still have a kind of latent Christianity about them. So if you mention a story, and again, I know I'm in a privileged position because of my job, if you mention a story, they sort of still remember the big stories of Christianity and can relate to them. So, I think me being a minister gives me a different perspective than you guys. I understand you just the job, and I'm fully aware the job is to make them laugh, not to preach. I don't go in anywhere to preach or convert at all. I go in to make people laugh, and hopefully part of that will see that, hey, he was funny, him, and he's a Baptist minister, you know what I mean? They can't all be off their heads and whatever. So I think I'm a little bit in a different position than both of you guys because of who or what I am, shall I say, rather.
Well, that's great. We'll carry on that conversation because lots of things that we have mentioned there that could be unpacked. But certainly all of us on the same page in terms of the fact that when you're doing comedy, your job is to do comedy. Your job isn't to sort of stage your own TED talk or flash mob your own gospel tract or anything like that. So we're going to take a short break and we'll carry on with that. And I do want to get to Britain's Got Talent, Alan, because it is one of the most miraculous things I've ever seen. Just seeing the Reverend Alan Finnegan, who met me in Starbucks in Fallowfield, suddenly in the semi-final of Britain's Got Talent. But you are watching and listening to Unbelievable from Premier Christian Radio. This episode I am entitling A Christmas Cajole, and I have been joined by Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan, two comedians and one professional vicar. Lots more to talk about. We're talking about faith and how it interplays with comedy? Is there a place for faith on the comedy circuit? And we're having a nice time. We've got lots of lighthearted things to say, maybe a few laughs to come as well. So stay tuned and we'll be back after this short break.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith and the Evidence for God Apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Unbelievable show. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio, hosted by me, Andy Kind. And this episode I'm entitling A Christmas Cajole. It's a little pun. I came up with it on the spot. I'm not sure whether it works or not, but I'm sure you'll let me know in the comments. I've been joined today by Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan, two very, very good and very experienced comedians, one of whom is a Baptist minister, one of whom is Milton Jones. And we are talking today about comedy and faith, a little lighthearted episode as we head towards the new year after Christmas. And I want to go straight in this second part. We're into the open spot or middle act territory now. We've all been there. An open spot is a new act who comes and shows themselves up, disgraces themselves usually, and sometimes is funny during the middle of the show. So let's not try and disgrace ourselves or embarrass our family in this section, guys. But Alan, you went to theological college. You did a module on preaching. You did a thesis on comedy and faith. And then a few years later, you got to the semi-final of Britain's Got Talent, a big talent show which is staged on TV. And it happened during the pandemic. I still pinch myself thinking that that happened. Just tell us the process by which you ended up in the semi-final of one of the most popular TV shows in the UK.
Well, I'm not, I don't know whether that you're supposed to say all this, but I didn't apply. I wouldn't apply. I never think I'm funny enough for anything like that. I wouldn't have the confidence to apply. I was approached by producers, as I had been a few years earlier. They basically spoke to me on the phone and said, we want to put you straight through to judges down in London. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. I didn't really know what that meant. Then you spend about, well, I don't know, months where they tell you what you can and what you can't say, words what you can and can't say, literally jokes that you can and can't do because of they might get sued and all that type of stuff. I'm clean, I think. But they're just subjects. So they shape your act. They sort of mold you. They made me wear a dog collar. I couldn't believe it. I didn't want to wear one. I don't wear one, you know what I mean? But they said it'll make good television. And they do this thing where they just keep saying stuff to you until it wears you out. And you're like, okay, I guess I'll wear a dog collar then, you know? I literally got ended up having to travel down to London at my own expense, I want to add, and going into the London Palladium. I went on the London Palladium stage, was on there for about 10 minutes, got 4 yeses, standing ovation. I was terrified, I was nervous, I forgot everything I was going to say before I walked on. It was like, just smile and wave and see what happens. But I was probably grossly underprepared for that kind of thing and the follow-up of it, probably. But it's a good memory to have, I suppose. Being on there, and then the pandemic hit, So, and my career nosedived after that. It was just lit. The time it should take off, it literally evaporated overnight. So, happy days. I've always been lucky. So it was mad. A mad time in my life a little bit. It was unbelievable. But some good memories now of that. The semi-final itself was... That was shot during pandemic and lockdowns and everything. And that was just horrible. That was an empty room where they shoved me in a pulpit up out the miles away from it. There was only four people in the room and they were the four judges. They were about 50 foot away from me. Four separated tables. There was a big, massive screen with loads of little faces on. But that was silent because there was a 7 second delay. So, I mean, it wasn't unlike a lot of my gigs in the early days where you tell a joke and nobody laughs. You know what I mean? So it was literally, that was a hard experience and I didn't enjoy that experience one bit. When they told me I hadn't got through to the final, I thanked them. So it was a bit, so I was actually quite glad because I didn't think I could do that again. But that's where
the persistence things comes into it, isn't it? Because as Nietzsche said, if you want to succeed in anything, what you need is long obedience in the same direction. And I think when I felt called into comedy by God, I was under the misapprehension that therefore everything would be fantastic. I wouldn't have a single bad gig. And not only have I had plenty of bad gigs, and you can have a bad gig at any time, can't you? You can have it because as your bar raises, you can fall short of that bar. But for you, Milton, have there been times where you have been close to giving up and really wrestled with that idea of sort of God's providence, God's grace and favor? Have you ever felt like there was a time where God was sort of stopping blessing you as a comedian?
Yes, and snap in terms of thinking that, well, it'll be easy now because clearly I'm on God's mission. It seemed worse, especially because of, I think the swearing thing can get you through stuff for open spots and things, you know. It's almost a guaranteed laugh in certain places. Yeah. And if you're not going to rely on those, then it can take longer to get going, quite literally. So putting that aside, yes, there have been other times where... I mean, I always say to kids who might be doing it, the biggest muscle you need to develop is your bounce back muscle. Because even if something goes well, you will end up having to start again. You know, whether you have a show or something, you do it, and then it stops. Now what are you going to do? So the best thing is to have a really good, no sulking, start writing, go back to ABC, whatever it takes, because even if you have a successful career, you will have to reinvent yourself a lot of times. So get used to that. And, you know, if someone were to ask me, what are you most proud of? I'd say that I've kept going, you know, because good and bad things happen and will. But the thing that I'm in control of is, it's like if I'm playing cricket and I get hit by a bouncer, I can retire hurt. But then no more runs are scored. So it's getting the focus again. I think faith helps in that sense because you're able to step outside yourself a little bit. And also to what is valuable for me, at least, is to have a small group of people to whom I hope to hear the truth and generally do. And they will tell me, pick me up when I'm down and maybe push me down a bit when I'm a bit too up.
I think you're absolutely right, Milton. I think it's all about endurance. And really, the Christian faith, although people don't realize this when they become Christians in younger age, the Christian faith is all about endurance as well. And so I wonder whether our faith has helped us in our comedy journey, and maybe vice versa, the ability to just face down a crowd or a tough situation and just be fairly philosophically stoical and spiritually Christian about it is something, something that helps.
I mean, the complication for us, I think, is that we are the product. And that's quite difficult because if it goes badly, it feels like it's all our fault, and it may well be. But if it goes well, it's also all our fault, which is kind of, it can seduce you into believing your own publicity just for a night or two. And in theory, at least, your faith allows you to, it's not really me. It's just a muscle I've developed. And, you know, it doesn't actually say what's going on. You know, people know you after a gig or think they know you. They don't know you at all. And or what's going on in your head or what, you know. And the danger is that you believe your own publicity and you're as good as the last gig you did. But that it's a more, you've got to take a mean over a long period of time. And even then, it's not actually you.
In fairness, I've wanted to quit being a Baptist minister more than I have a comedian. So just to put a bit of balance in there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andy.
Fine. But as Milton was saying, there is no magic supernatural spell that gets cast the moment you step into comedy. When it comes to comedy writing, there is no creation ex nihilo. God did that with the universe, but actually you might say, and I think this is true, that God pays for what he orders and he does equip us as we go, but you don't suddenly become a genius by feeling called into comedy, do you? And it is a real crucible. It is a baptism of fire, to use a slightly cheesy expression. And I'm sure we've all had moments where we thought, I am not sure whether this is right anymore. I'm not sure whether I can do this. And I suppose you get to that point where you thought, and it's something that you referenced at the start, Milton, I am not what I do. My identity, hopefully, is not tied up in being a comedian. Although a lot of the time, that's probably wishful thinking. So let's talk about ego and let's talk about truthfulness, because I have people coming up to me after gigs and talking to me about the material I've used as though it's just gospel truth. And this is, I think, partly why it's difficult to do gigs for churches, because they are used to sitting facing a stage where they are given candid, earnest teaching. And so the idea that we're not completely using the truth, we might be using figurative language, we might be using hyperbole, it's difficult for some people to get their heads around. So people come up and say, how's your granddad? Well, my granddad died 20 years ago. I just like the story, so I keep using it. But how does ego then? What have been, we'll start with you, Alan, what have been the points where you've really had to sort of get your ego in check or inflate it a little bit after being completely deflated?
Firstly, I did struggle with the kinds of truth thing at first, coming from a preaching background where every word you're at is analysed to see if it's true and biblical. Realising that I could make stuff up as a comedian was hard originally, and I couldn't do it. It was like, I can't say that because that's not real kind of thing. So it was weird for me at first to get out of that. But the ego stuff, I have a very low self-esteem. I have myself. If anything, I need constantly picking it up. I'm quite introvert. I'm quite probably, I don't even know, socially awkward at times if I go into a room where there's people who I don't know. So people find that weird that I'll then stand on a stage and, you know, do comedy or preach. And I always tell them that that's because I'm on my own still, so it feels okay to me. But ego, I don't I struggle with the opposite of ego, possibly. I struggle with a real low self-image. So I don't think I'm funny either. Even though my head tells me at times I am funny, I almost always am the default opposite of ego. I have the lowest of my own opinion. And that's a battle that I have to try and constantly fight against and tell myself, no, it's not. That's not true as well. You know what I mean? That isn't true. You're not as bad as your head tells you are all the time. You are funny. And I have to tell myself, and particularly when it's at, when it feels like it's a tough gig and, you know, you're going on a bit late and some people have had a bit of a mare and that, and you literally you'd have to sort of say to yourself, no, come on, I'm doing what Milton said before about the mean thing over a longer period of time. You know this works. You know you get laughs in this. You know, just go on there, be confident, do it. And then you can go back to being a little scared when you get off the stage again, do you know what I mean? And hiding in the corner kind of thing. But yeah, so ego, yeah, I don't think. I mean, I might be being uber humble, but I don't think I've got an ego in a sense.
Yeah. No, I think so. You're probably right in that. And it's about having a low opinion of your own opinion almost, isn't it? It's not about having a high or low opinion of yourself.
Yeah.
Not worrying too much about your opinions. Because in comedy, and this is one of the sort of weird sort of paradoxes, in order to do comedy at all, you just cannot worry too much about what people think about you. But in order to be a good comedian, it really matters what people think about you, because they actually do have to like you in order for you to keep going. Milton, what about you with the ego thing? Because you have had some monstrous highs as a comedian. How high can that trajectory go before there's a dip in your experience? And how do you handle the highs?
It's quite difficult. I think what Alan's saying, for me, I think most comedians think of themselves as the worst comedian in the world and the best comedian in the world, in that I think when you're on a high or when you've had a particularly good gig, it's not that you think you're the best comedian, but you think you've got something that no one else has got. And in a way, it's important that that's true. So you're always walking a tightrope. And when the gig goes well, people don't even realize it's a tightrope. But when it goes badly and you fall off, people are sort of horrified and you're horrified. And then you think, well, is this it now? That it feels like your career could be over until you do the next gig. And that's true after 30 years, I'm afraid. And another thing I say to people who are starting is get used to falling off. Because it will happen. It doesn't matter what stage your career is at. A year or two, I did the Cardiff Retail Awards. And just before I went on stage, someone said, you know, they don't speak English, yeah? All 400 people. The sound guy thought it was funny. No one else did.
Yeah.
And I was on for half an hour. Now, that was clearly I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but that will happen. Get used to that. And if you can't cope with that, you're in the wrong job. I'm not saying it's going to be nice and you're going to enjoy it, but so there will be ups and downs, and, you know, awards and stuff is great, but sometimes you're just in the right place at the right time and it's your turn to some extent. And you know, the things that I look back on with the most satisfaction are not so much the things that had the most publicity, but maybe going and doing a benefit in a field and the whole village turned out and the microphone didn't work properly, but everyone really loved it. Mm. You know, ultimately, and we raised money for whatever it was.
Yeah.
Those are the things that go, that was worthwhile. All the other stuff depends on so many other factors that you almost can't give yourself credit. Yes, you were in the running for that sort of thing, but who won the award last year? Who was on the panel? It turns out I'd met him before. Yeah, and there's always a way around it that you can talk yourself down out of it. But these things are useful.
Yeah, and we talked about endurance. We talked about humility. Again, both things that Christians are commanded and suggested that they have. And I think that's something that we all three of us have learned. And sometimes the quickest route to humility is through humiliation. And hopefully you have you have longer periods between humiliations. But it is Christmas season, and as all comedians know, Black Friday for comedians is the final weekend before Christmas, where everybody's hammered, and you're basically just there to get paid to be executed, essentially. So we do have those my God, why have you forsaken me moments, but then also those redemption stories. So just quickly before our next break, we've got a couple of minutes until our next break. Can you think of an example? It might not be a massive gig. It might just be a little small gig where you've been there and you thought, okay, I see it. I see here that my comedy journey, my faith journey have interlinked here. I see that God has done something in this place. I remember, I'll tell my story and let you guys think about it. I remember doing a gig in Hove, as in Brighton in Hove, many years ago now. And I turned up, and it was a Methodist church, I think, and they'd opened it up to the community, and they had some of the older ladies from the Methodist church. And then a group of lads had come along with their mate who was part of the church, but they were going out drinking afterwards. And I did some comedy, and it didn't go very well. They didn't hate me, but it didn't go very well. But then the minister said, we've got this lad, Colin, his name was, I think, who's going to come and do a dance. And they had this lad with Down syndrome who came up and did an interpretive dance to Shine, Jesus, Shine. And I thought, well, if they're not going to like me, that this is going to be, this is going to be absolutely terrible. I almost said to the minister, please don't let Colin do this, because it will be terrible. And you've got a group of lads here about to go drinking. Maybe some of them have been drinking already. Yeah. But as Colin started dancing, just the atmosphere completely changed. And by the end of this interpretive dance, that some of those guys were just weeping. And it wasn't to do with me, but there was just something about being there and opening up that space. They'd come because of the comedy, whether they wanted to heckle or not. They'd come because of the comedy, and there was just something redemptive in that. So quickly, Alan Milton, have you got a little redemption story from doing comedy? Alan, what about you, mate?
I remember quite early on, and when you're doing stuff, and I got a gig in Manchester in Wythenshaw with this accent, which for anyone who doesn't know, there's a kind of rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester, me being from Liverpool. And I was at the bar before it started, just getting a Diet Coke, and some fellow went to me, "Are you one of the acts?" I said, "Yeah, mate." He went, "Oh, good luck." I went, "Oh, thanks, mate." He went, no, you're going to need a cage, right? So I stood up and I literally said, "Let's just get this out the way." That's all I said. The whole crowd booed me, started swearing at me. Some of them were spitting at me, right? And I went, "Calm down," which just insinuated the more. Anyway, I said, listen, just give us 5 minutes at the end for me to get in my car and run away before you come after me, right? I said, "Anyway, I'm a minister of a church. It's worse than me just being a scouser. I'm a minister of a church. This dead rough pub." And they literally all went, that confused them. They all went quiet. And then I literally, at the end of that gig, and I got a standing ovation from this crowd that was baying to kill me. Like, they'd been spitting at me at the beginning, literally spitting at me, right? And then at the end, I got a standing ovation off them. And then I couldn't get to my car because of the amount of conversations I had. And most of the conversations were, "I used to go to church, but..." Do you get what I mean? We've probably all had them kinds of conversations with people. "I used to go to church, but this happens. I used to go to church, but that happens. I used to go to church, but I'm this now." And I couldn't get out of the venue for ages. And here was me thinking I was going to get my head kicked in. And I ended up like talking to lots of people. So that's one of the redemption ones.
Yeah, that's great. Milton, we'll talk about yours after this next short break. It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm just really interested in how sometimes we're just there to open up conversations and open up those spaces. But you are watching Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio with your host, Andy Kind. I've been joined by Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan. And we're talking about comedy. We're talking about faith. And we are all comedians, all Christians. And in both regards, we know very well about death and resurrection. That's what comedy is largely about. So we're going to be talking a little bit about cancel culture. We're going to be talking a little bit about how difficult it is to be a Christian on the comedy circuit, and hopefully some positive stuff as well after this next short break. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Unbelievable with me, your host, Andy Kind. This is the final part of our comedy spectacular, A Christmas Cajole, where I've been joined by two men of faith, two men of comedy, Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan. We've talked about lots of things so far and lots we want to cram in this section, but we're going to go back to what we were talking about, the idea of being in a place as a man of faith in quite a difficult environment, or a person of faith, and seeing God open up those spaces just by the fact that you're there. So Milton, we heard from Alan before the break, we got a little redemption story.
Yes, our interaction is not just with an audience. When you've done it for as long as we have, you see the same people behind the stage, the other performers, the technicians, the directors, yeah, the people who run the clubs and all these things. And my commitment is not just to comedy, but it's to that community,
yeah,
over a number of years. And it's not a sort of hit and run operation. It's the long haul. And that's really only the test of a person, I think, ultimately, if you're there in all those highs and lows for other people as well.
Yeah,
in terms of redemption and stuff, it's difficult to pin down, but the things that stick in my head are people coming up to me in the street or afterwards and just saying, that's the most fun we've had since the baby died, or something really awful, where it just leaves you speechless. But I remember I'd done a radio show on Radio 4 for a while, and a mother wrote in to say that they really loved the show, her two boys. And they're like 9 and 10. That gives you an idea of the where I'm aiming. But they moved to France and they had no friends in the playground. And what they used to play Milton Jones in the playground. They used to get together and sing the theme song and then pretend to be stupid for the whole of break when they got together, because no one else spoke their language. And she just wanted me to know that that had been a positive thing, in a mind-blowing in a way for me to get my head around that being helpful. In a way, it could have been anyone. But there was something that a 9 and 10-year-old tuned into that helped them through a difficult situation. There are plenty of unredemption stories, yeah, where it's all gone wrong. Yeah. Which you have to have the other side of it as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Where
yeah,
you were doing just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you said something, yeah, and it's gone the other way.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Absolutely. But we don't write those down in the scriptures. So comedy history is written by the winners. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's interesting because a lot of people, and in this section, I want to talk also about the being on that boundary between the world of comedy and the world of church. It isn't always easy. And people will say, do you swear? Why do you swear? Or do you preach the gospel? And some more sort of enthusiastic Christians will say, oh, it's great because comedians are the modern day prophets, to which my answer is usually, we're not at all. You might have a couple of people who are genuinely prophetic, Mark Steele, for instance. But really, comedians are yes men and snake oil salesmen. We are there to groom the ego of the audience. We're there to tell them what they want to hear. Because again, as we said earlier, you won't laugh at something that you disagree with, which is why you don't go on as a Christian and make jokes about Christianity in a comedy club. And I don't do that in a church either, because I feel like I'm there for the people who've been invited. I'm not there simply to entertain the choir, because where's the mission in that? Where's the ministry in that? But I wonder what it's like for you guys post-pandemic. Milton, you started comedy right at the genesis of what we would call, or may no longer call, the alternative comedy circuit, which is now the comedy circuit. That must have been a very exciting time. Was the atmosphere very secular, very cynical then? And have you felt a change in terms of the way people respond to you as a person of faith? Have you felt a change in that, a softening or a hardening, and or has it gone up and down like a little race?
It's quite hard to tell because obviously I was less well known and younger and further down the pecking order. So all those things come into play. I would say it's far more political in the old days. When I started, they were still ranting about the miners' strike and it was quite left-wing. Whereas I think now it's far more mainstream. And that is both good and bad. In a way, we need a group of students to break away from the mainstream now and do their own alternative thing. But maybe that's happening. The thing after COVID, I've noticed is that there are far more Instagrammers about now who have built up a following, will bring that to the club. And the promoter's fine with it because they bring an audience. But sometimes I've literally seen people say, do you remember when I did this photo? And my mum was in the background and the audience came over. I said, sometimes I feel like one of those comedians that were around when I started, who were like mother-in-law comedians, I call them, where they do Irish jokes and stuff. And when alternative comedy happened, they went, oh, this isn't funny. This isn't. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, badges and yam.
Things change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very good. What about you, Alan? Have you seen post-pandemic a change in the way that people relate to you? I would say, from a personal perspective, that the sort of as the new atheism has waned, I think so that has filtered down into the public sphere. And whereas when I started in the mid-2000s, it was very cool to be a sort of angry atheist. That doesn't seem to be the case now. Everything seems a bit more fractious and atomized and balkanized. So no one really agrees with anybody else on anything, which is where comedy can be quite interesting because you can build those bits of common ground. Alan, what about you? Have you noticed a change over your career in how people have related to you as a person of faith, either audiences or comedians?
I think it's got easier for me. I think when I first started, it was harder because of being a minister of a church and identifying as that when I did it. So my first line would say that people would immediately, there'd be barriers up back in the day. I think that's less now. I don't think they're as bothered about that. And particularly with acts, because again, what Milton says, because you see acts lots of times and different club people behind the scenes lots of times. It's that longevity of relationship. That has changed because I think that they were very suspicious of me at first. What's he doing here kind of thing? What are you doing comedy? That kind of thing. And so I would say it's slightly got easier for me over the last few years, and it's nothing to do with Britain's Got Talent or anything like that. It's just more that, I don't know, maybe I'm more trusted. I don't really know, to be fair, but it feels easier for me to go and talk about being a minister of a church than it did when I first started. When I first started, it was very much, the audience was almost like, oh, hang on, what's he going to say? And it took a few minutes for them to start laughing at anything. Where now that's not the case. They just don't laugh. It's not the case anymore. So I think it got easier for me, personally.
Yeah. And are we worried, any of us, about being cancelled? One thing that's interesting about you, Milton, and it's also the case with Tim Vine, is that of all the comedians on the circuit, you are two people who talk very little and show very little of who you actually are. You do one-liners, you play the character, you mesh your hair up. Presumably, that's not something that you're worried about. And because you're clean by proxy, by default, that's not something you worry about. But a lot of your contemporaries or people you started with have come under a bit of fire.
Sure, but sensibilities change. I think some stuff I did 15 years ago, I don't do anymore. Not because it's just people's attitude to certain subjects or race or relationships. And it's just a bit, words change their meaning slightly. And you just have to be a bit careful. I was listening to Jimmy Carr. Someone asked him the same question about tweets. Do you think sometimes you're writing a tweet, this is your career about to end? He said, to be honest, I've already written my career ending tweet. They just haven't found it yet. Because people go back through history and then take it out of context, or maybe in context, but suddenly, because sensibilities have changed, social media has opened a door to a Pandora's box of memories of bad stuff. I'm not immune from that sort of thing. And also, as we know, sometimes if something spontaneous happens, you have half a second to think.
Yeah.
And you might say the most inappropriate thing without realizing. And then where does that end?
Yeah.
So
it does.
I usually do that in a funeral or something.
Yeah, you'd do that in a funeral. Sorry. Yeah. And it does seem that there's very little focus now on context and intent. And again, comedy is just acting. And I think this is what I want to lead into, talking about doing gigs for churches or doing gigs as a known Christian. All of us to different degrees would be known as Christians on the comedy circuit and known as comedians within the Christian world. And how much have you felt supported or irritated, enthused or disabused by the Christian world? Milton, I know we've talked quite a lot over the years. You don't like to do gigs in churches or for churches. Do you want to just expand on that?
I'm not saying that gigs shouldn't happen in churches or that people shouldn't do them. I'm just saying, for me, that's not my job. My job is in the comedy industry, and doesn't mean I'll never do something in a church, but for a number of reasons. Sometimes I've done things in churches and then left with a slightly unsettled feeling, in that I wasn't sure what the evening was about, really. I think it ultimately perpetuated a subculture. I'd much rather say to people, come and see me in a club or a theater.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're playing with truth a lot of the time and stirring things up and doing stuff in church. There's a whole nother level that complicates things. And I don't want to be doing jokes, like you were saying, Andy, about jokes in churches. I wouldn't like a visitor there to be confused because it was such an in-joke. I'd much rather those people went to a theater or a club.
Yeah.
The bottom line, though, is it's not my job. Yeah. It's not my job.
That's it.
Yeah.
Someone else.
Go on, Al.
If I'm going to get cancelled by anyone, it'll be the church, in fairness.
Yeah. I'm in.
And I'm similar. I'm not massively over keen on doing church gigs. I've done them, obviously, and I do them. But they're not massively over keen on me neither. I'd rather do the. I didn't get into it to be a church comedian. When I decided to carry on going, it was to be in proper comedy clubs and trying to do what I do in proper comedy clubs and working out how to do that in a way that is funny and genuine and authentic to a comedy club. I often struggle in church gigs, if I'm honest.
But I think there's something, comedy is rightly a form of art, and all art is about what if, isn't it? It's about what if and what is. So comedy and art doesn't prescribe, it just describes, which is what it should do. But, and this is a generalization, but particularly in the evangelical world, everything is so focused towards what ought to be, how ought one to live, what ought one to say and not say. And you don't get an ought from an is, which is why I think it's very difficult to do. And I arguably do the most church gigs of any comedian in the world. I don't know. I haven't checked in the state. But I have certainly found barriers there that I've tried to cross, tried to push the envelope and been machine gunned by the boundaries of acceptability. I'm not sure that the evangelical world, for all its talk, of wanting pioneers. I'm not sure that it wants creative pioneers. I think it wants people to guard the picket lines. That's how it sometimes feels at times. And so you can be met with this moralism. There's that delay while they work out, is it okay to laugh at this? But if you think that a laugh is an impulse, it's a response, and then you're checking the impulse, it just makes it a lot harder. So I've found that when I went through a phase of just doing gigs for churches, although they were paying well, I became quite numb and soft-edged as a comedian. I lost my sharpness. I lost my hard-edgedness and felt myself becoming a little bit trite and tweaked. So actually, I've recently come back onto the circuit because I missed that sharpness and that hardness. But then it can be very difficult to go from a weekend at a comedy club to a Mother's Union gig or whatever it is, because they're not ready for it. Post-pandemic as well, I don't know how you feel about this, guys, but it seems that audiences in general are much more self-aware. So they're much more aware of being looked at. There's an extra level of fear to individuals, to all of us as individuals, because what are we allowed to believe this week? Who are we supposed to cancel this week? So have you noticed that? And do you have any comments on the idea of churches wanting Christian comedians, but actually not really wanting it on our terms, but on their terms? Milton.
Often I feel under pressure to say something that they all agree with. And that plays itself out in, can you do half an hour? And then in the second half, we'll interview you. And I say, that's too big a gear change. I don't really feel comfortable with that, because my experience of having done it is they want to formularize your story so that they can put it into a nice, neat box. Whereas in fact, if what we do works, we're taking things out of the box and throwing them in the air. And I don't want to be then pushed back in again by having to use these words or whatever it is. I'd much rather leave it as a mess. That's why I'm suspicious, because it's quite hard to do that if people are pushing you into it without it becoming a fight.
Yeah. There isn't really that artistic freedom, is there? And art doesn't mind a mess. Art is about asking questions, whereas, again, the Christian world can sometimes seem to be geared towards simply proclaiming answers. And if you go on in any kind of, and I'm sure there are people, Christians in the arts, who find this as well, if you go on anywhere to try and propagate your art and you're not giving clear answers, people don't know what to do with that. And then you get accused of backsliding or falling away or capitulating.
Sure. I think it was Dave Tomlinson, wasn't it? He wrote a book called Addicted to Certainty. Yeah. And that's what it feels like. Look, we need to make it all perfectly understandable and clear.
Very clear.
Yeah. What about you, Al?
I learned the hard way that you can't just go and do your comedy club act in a church the way you would normally.
Yeah.
Quite quiet gigs then. So I learned that quite early on that I have to get them to like me first, to trust me first, before, and I almost have to tickle their ego first to say, oh, you're lovely. I'm going to be okay. I won't make you laugh at anything that isn't inappropriate. And then once they get to that point, you can then go into, you can almost say what you want after that, and they will laugh and stay with you to a degree. So it's that for me, it's that kind of finding. I had to find how to do a church gig, which is why I didn't like them, in a sense.
Do we have a definition of the difference between secular audiences and sacred audiences? Would we say that with a comedy club, you've got 1 minute to show that you're funny, and with a church, you've got to spend the first 10 minutes proving that you're nice, and then you can be funny?
Sure.
I would say that, yeah, defo. That's what I've found, anyway. A comedy audience is, just make me laugh. Don't mess about. Get me laughing. And a church audience is, oh, am I okay to laugh with you? Is the minister watching me? What will such and such think of me if I laugh at that joke? Until they're all laughing, you almost have to find the permission giver in the room and get them to laugh and them to go along with it before you can get the rest of the crowd on board in a church gig. And that's a different skill, I think.
Yeah. Elton?
Adding, agree with that, but also adding to it, often people in the church gig have never been to a comedy.
Yeah.
they're not quite sure how to react anyway, let alone in a church. So you've got a double whammy of confusion there. And you've probably got a massive great ceiling above you, which complicates it. And they're sitting in pews or whatever it is. Often the building or the setup is ideally designed to be the worst possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I learned from pandemic and stuff like that was, because we all churches, we all had to go online straight away. And I realized quite quickly on that we couldn't do our church service the way we did normally when it was just people in the room. When it was online, we had to change it. And we literally completely changed from my only sort of experience of church was like a half an hour singing, half an hour preach. The kids go out at some point. Do you get what I mean? And that, now we're very much a hymn, prayer, sandwich church where we have little sections and we sit on couches and totally different. But that's a reverse of the pandemic on what I picked up from doing comedy and that to communicate the church in a better way during pandemic. And we've carried it on since. And the pandemic helped me in a different way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We're nearly at
the end. Bit of a segue there.
We're nearly at the end. Just time for one sort of final question. And linked to your thesis, Alan, that you did, the question for us is,
hell yeah,
if comedy can be missionary, where can it be? If comedy can be missional, where and how does that happen? From a personal perspective, I would say that I am there to be a catalyst for more hope, more joy, more peace, more freedom, more love. I want to display in who I am and in what I say that better story. I want to be a hint and a signpost to that better story where there is fullness of life, where there is fullness of joy. And for me, although I do church gigs, and I will sometimes, so tonight I'm doing it in Kendall, but I'm preaching there tomorrow morning. When I'm preaching, I'm not trying to do comedy. When I'm doing comedy, I'm not trying to preach. So that's how I've navigated it, because I do actually want to do both, but you can't, it's not a compound noun. On the comedy circuit, for me, the ministry, it's not even necessarily mission, but ministry is with those comedians who are going through a really hard time. And we all know them. We've been them. And just being able to show that they are, and to tell them that they are loved, they are valued, and that they have an identity beyond what they see. You may just completely agree with that. But if comedy is missional, if we are missionaries to the arts, in what way does that outwork itself, Milton?
I think partly what you said about it's the people. The other thing I was thinking too, though, that the truth isn't two separate circles. The truth all in the church. Truth all in the world. There's a real mixture between it. And it's one of the first gigs I saw was Eddie Izzard talking about missiles. It was a Gulf War. It's probably the first Gulf War. And the government were telling us that they were so computer operated that they didn't kill the wrong person.
Yeah.
And Eddie did this great routine about, yeah, that's right. The missile comes along and it rings the bell of the house. And it checks who's in and who's out. And then goes in and just gets the... And it was brilliantly done. It was very satirical, but it just hit the nail on the head in terms of the truth about something that was happening in the real world. And words don't have to be about God all the time, but at the truth in social situations, in family situations, in politics, whatever it is, the truth is God's truth wherever it is. And those are that's worth fighting for in and of itself. And lots of comedians who aren't Christians are actually exposing the truth as well.
Yeah.
So what I would like to do is just blur the boundaries. And conversely, of course, there are plenty of hidden bad things in churches that you can't really tackle with comedy as such. It's a whole different thing. Yeah, that's what I would say, is that the truth doesn't belong to one or the other.
And ultimately, theologically, truth is a person. Jesus is the truth, and that person is love. And so we're there to try and show those hints. Alan, quickly, what about you?
Whatever you do, and it's instinctively linked to who you are, and whether I'm in a church preaching or whether I'm in a comedy club with other comedians and audience that isn't a congregation in a sense,
or whether I'm in the pub with my mates. It's literally about who you are and you carry that with you. It has to be authentic, doesn't it, what you do? Even if you're playing a character like Milton does, he plays it authentically. And because of who I am, this is who I am. That's what I bring to it. For me, there's no divide. But there you go.
Fantastic. Thank you, Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan. You have been watching Unbelievable, a Christmas cajole, very much inside the comedian's studio. And we've talked about this sort of boundaries and barriers between faith and comedy. We hope that you have smiled. We hope that you've been given some food for thought. Not that you need any after Christmas, but thank you for joining us. And we will be back with more episodes of Unbelievable in the new year. Once again, just finally, thank you to Milton Jones and Alan Finnegan. You can see them on YouTube. You can see them around the country. And do go up and say that you loved them on this podcast, because that will mean a lot to me, if not to them. We will see you soon on Unbelievable from Premier Christian Radio. Goodbye.
Thank you for joining us on Unbelievable, the show that aims to get you thinking. We would love to hear your thoughts. Do get in touch. You can email us at unbelievable@premier.org.uk or leave a comment on our Twitter account at UnbelievableFE or on the Premier Unbelievable Facebook page. And do check out our website, premierunbelievable.com. Registering there gives you access to all of our web content and our newsletter, through which you can gain access to hours of exclusive bonus content. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you register or sign up for our newsletter there, you will automatically be entered into our competition to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to Unbelievable, please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. Thank you for listening, and see you next week.